Welcome to Clifton Health On Air.
I'm your host, Danielle.
And I'm your co-host, Lauren.
And welcome to our local health department podcast here in Clifton, New Jersey.
We are located just about 12 miles west of New York City.
And today we have a special episode for the summer, and it's all around lead education and childhood lead exposure. And today with us, we have two wonderful nurses from our nursing division, Romney Miyazawa and Joanne Hathaway. Welcome, ladies.
Welcome.
Thank you.
Thanks so much. Pleasure to be here with you.
Awesome. Thank you so much for coming on Clifton Health On Air. And we are just super excited to learn all about childhood lead. But first, can you explain what that is?
So we're here today just to talk about lead. Protecting children from exposure to lead is important to lifelong good health. Lead is a heavy metal that may be found in the home or the environment. And lead exposure can impair intellectual development and damage the brain if the level's high enough. So, you know, we want all children to have their lead exposures minimized. And, you know, we want to be, you know, we're here to try to, you know, talk about some things to decrease children's exposure to lead. Some sources of lead exposure that can be found in a child's environment might be their home. You know, homes built before 1978 when lead-based paints were banned probably contain lead-based paint. You know, so when the paint peels or cracks, this can make lead dust. And so, you know, children can be exposed to lead if, you know, they chew on these surfaces. Certain water pipes might contain lead. Lead can be found in some products such as toys and jewelry. And lead can sometimes be found in candies or traditional home remedies, which we'll go into in a little bit. And, you know, certain jobs and hobbies that involve working with lead-based products like stained glass work may cause parents to bring lead into the home. So right now in the state of New Jersey, there is universal testing that is required for all children at ages 1 and 2. So this lead testing would be done at the doctor's office with a blood test. Mm-hmm. And right now in the state of New Jersey, the actionable level is 5 micrograms per deciliter.
So basically awesome. What happens, how the Clifton Health Department and all the public health nurses would get involved is that when the child has their lead level done at 1 and at 2, if that blood lead level is higher than 5 micrograms per deciliter, then that kind of notifies us immediately. The doctors are notified, the labs notify us, and we start nursing case management for that child and that family. So what we would be doing in that case, just so everyone knows, is that we would be contacting the parent. We would be making arrangements to have a home visit. We would be checking with the parent when we go to the home about possible sources of lead in the home, like Romney mentioned, if the home was built before 1978, if there was chipping or peeling paint in the house, that would be a case. So basically what happens with childhood lead poisoning is that the child basically has to ingest the lead. So everybody says, like, why would my...
Do you see a lot of pushback from parents that they're unaware that their child is... like chewing on the paint or...
Right. So basically, you look at a child and they look perfectly fine. There's no way to know by looking at them that they possibly have lead poisoning. And similarly, people would be like, why would my child would never be eating lead? You know, they wouldn't be eating a paint chip. Mm-hmm. But in actual fact, the lead tastes sweet. So it actually makes perfect sense, if we know children at all, that they would be eating the paint if it's around in their environment. Similarly, there could be lead dust in the apartment from even if the paint is all pristine and beautifully done, if the friction surfaces wear away so that you get down to the old lead dust that was the lead that was paint was there prior, that dust is going to get around. The child gets their hands on it and they can put it in their mouth.
So what are the friction surfaces?
So a friction surface would be, again, we're talking about homes built before 1978, would be, for example, windows or doors. So as you're opening and closing the windows, you're wearing away the nice new paint, and you're getting down to the old paint that does have lead in it. So like I said, if there's dust around, the child walks along, could be chewing on, we've seen children with bite marks on the windowsills, or putting their hands up there, and the dust gets on their fingers. So paint is one way, Romney mentioned possibly water. We also can have pottery in the home that could be a problem. It could have glaze on it that has it. You can have Ayurvedic medications that have heavy metals in them. You can also have imported foods, candies, and things that are made from outside of the country that mm-hmm. might have been contaminated with lead at some point. So those are all the things we would be evaluating mm-hmm. as we go in and talk with the family, try and get an idea of what possible exposures the child might have. We would talk to them. You know, our main concern is, try and stop the child from getting any more lead, obviously. Mm-hmm. The other thing is we want to try and have any of the lead that is in the body, we want to try and help the child get rid of the lead that they have in their body, and we would do that by talking to the parent about nutrition, which we'll talk about in a little second. And then the only way, which we'll be mentioning multiple times, is to know if the lead level is going down is to, again, do another blood lead level. And that's the most important thing to mm-hmm. try and constantly remind, you know, the parents that we are going to have to work with the doctor mm-hmm. To check that blood lead level that every few months. Yeah. Wow. And then the other thing to know is that if the next lead level that we do in a few months is still above that level of 5, that was when our health inspectors would become involved in the case. And then in that scenario, then the inspectors would actually come out to the home with us. They have a machine that actually can test the walls and the areas for lead paint. And then they can give us a better idea as to whether or not there are, you know, lead hazards in the home that have to be abated in order for the safety of the children that live there.
Awesome. You guys do wonderful work.
Thank mm-hmm. you.
Just to touch upon, you talked about specific candies that kids might ingest, right?
Yeah.
How are they well-known candies, or they're always going to be candies that are brought in from out of the country?
So a lot of times, I mean, it is through imported goods, okay. So imported candies. You know, with just in general with imported mm-hmm. goods, it's hard to know because they're really not regulated the same way that they are here, and that's the same that goes with spices. You know, something that we recently, you know, really realized, you know, we kind of would always say, you know, use things that are, you know, made here. But for a lot of things, certain spices, certain candies, spices that are used for candies, they're not even grown in the U.S., right? They're grown from another country, okay. and then they get imported. So lead can be found in the soil where, you know, certain spices, vegetables, even, you know, where they grow from. It could be in the machinery where things are, where these the spices processed. Are processed. Yeah. It could be even found in wrappers, depending wow. on, you know.
So it can be literally the entire.
It could be in every process of it. So even though, right, and it's not to just, you know, we can't really blanket and say all the candies have it. It could be certain batches. It could be, so it's really hard to regulate and find, you know, it's difficult to pinpoint the exact source. But, you know, we give all this education. You know, we just want to make sure that parents of these children, you know, that they're well informed.
Awesome. So they can be super cautious. Yeah. I always tell a story of a coworker that I had years ago who was sipping this tea at work, and she friends of relatives of hers had sent it from someplace in South America, and she was like, oh, this is so good. This is so good. And then one day she said, oh, it's so sweet. Mm-hmm. And I said, uh-oh, wait a minute. Oh. And she's like, no, Joanne, don't take away my tea. And I took me 2 seconds to Google it, and her tea had been known to have lead right. in it. Yeah.
Okay.
So it was used as a sweetener, you know, and it still is in certain parts, you know, the world.
Recently, they just discovered that actually Beethoven, part of his deafness, they believe, is from lead poisoning.
Really?
That back in the day, they would take little lead circles or spheres and put them in wine to sweeten the wine.
Oh, my goodness.
And so, anyway, we're off the track of what we're doing for our Clifton Health Department.
Right.
But
fun facts.
We love good fun facts.
But right. When you don't know, right?
Yeah. So. If you don't know about it, how are you going to
know that it's harmful?
Harmful to your child. Right.
And just possibly, again. So just, you know, so we would just be actually looking at the spices that the family has and just say, you know, we might want to not be using this right now until we can figure out where the lead is coming from, until we have the child's lead level go down. So we'll be discussing all of that, you know, with them.
And that's something, you know, if there is a concern about specific products and stuff, you know, they can always, if the inspectors are involved, they can test it.
Mm-hmm. And we actually also have a consumer lead analyzer, which we've used for testing like certain like ceramic goods or even toys that the child has that will tell us whether or not there's, you know, lead in it, because children do put everything in their mouths, as we know.
We do know that for sure. Mm-hmm. And specifically, with warm weather increasing, though we do have a heat wave right now, but Why do you see increased lead levels in the summer?
Right. So, you know, summer, that's why, you know, that's why we wanted to be here now during this time in this heat wave. You know, summertime is really the perfect time for childhood lead poisoning prevention awareness. You know, the highest percentage of children found to have an elevated blood lead level, they're detected between July and August. So, again, it could be due to, you know, the summer months, you know, during the summer, school's out. So they do spend more time outdoors. So, you know, if they're spending time in their backyard, you know, if there's chipping and peeling paint outside their home, you know, again, if it's an older home, you know, the porch of their house, the siding, you know, if that paint chips, now it could be in the soil, and they could be playing in that. In the summertime as well, like Joanne mentioned, with the windows, you know, there's, you know, windows are more
wide open,
right? They're open and shut. So this could just cause some paint to chip and just generate more lead dust.
Porches are, you know, the old porches, especially people don't paint those as frequently as they're going to be painting the inside of their home. So a lot of times porches can have chipping and peeling paint on them.
Right.
If the child's going to be out there in the summertime.
And then in general, I mean, and then just being out of school, they could also be, they're just spending more time at home. If there is, you know, any kind of chipping paint inside the home, they're spending more time there. And then just a one other thing is just, you know, in the summertime, there's just so much more home renovations and projects going around. Just not, you know, maybe in your home, but also in your neighbor across the street, your neighbor next door. So, you know, that could also, if they're generating lead dust, that could, you know, that dust could end up, you know,
and possibly someone's got to watch the kids. So it may be at a family member's house too.
Right, exactly. They could be spending time, you know, it's harder to track, you know, they're not in school. So they could be spending time elsewhere where there's more lead hazards.
And that's another thing that we would go over with the parent if the child spends more than 10 hours a week someplace outside of the home. So say they're staying with grandma in Newark or someplace, then what we would actually do is that we would be contacting the Newark Health Department and they would be following up with the home in that particular area to see and make sure that that home was safe for the child as well. They would be doing an evaluation of the lead hazards in that space as well. Mm-hmm. So that would be something that would be triggered once the inspectors are
involved.
Oh, yeah. Right. So in terms of trying to obviously prevent all of these things to happen, because protecting children from lead, exposure to lead is obviously important to lifelong good health. Mm-hmm. And there is no safe blood level in children that's been identified. So even low levels of lead in blood can affect learning and ability to pay attention and academic achievement, et cetera. So, you know, the big thing that obviously we're talking about with the family is prevention. So that's like what Rami was mentioning, the, we would only want to use approved methods for lead removal and remediation and doing home renovations. You would want to be hiring somebody who's an expert at that. Regularly cleaning the floors and the windows, using wet methods. So we would tell people, we actually have a two-bucket method where you would use one bucket with the soap in it, one bucket with clear to rinse. So that way we're making sure that you're getting up all the lead in the window wells, on the windowsills, on the floor, et cetera. Simple things like removing their shoes, wiping off soil before entering the home. Mm-hmm. Obviously, hand washing is enormous, which we have to do with children anyway. Like I said, they're constantly have their hands in their mouth. But, you know, washing frequently, things that you see them put in their mouth frequently. So not only bottles and pacifiers, but
their toys.
Favorite toys that you know that they're going to have, you know, their little rubber ducky that they have in their mouth all the time. Mm-hmm. You want to be watching that. And then, like I mentioned before, one of the hugest things, because we want the child to be able to get rid of the lead that they do have in their body, is nutrition. And so a lot of children are very picky eaters, and that can be a difficult thing. So we would be working with the family where we would really want to increase the amount of calcium in their diet, because that does make it harder for the lead to enter the body. So foods that, you know, sweet potatoes, dried fruits, obviously all the dairy products have calcium in them. And then we would want a diet high in iron, because the iron protects against the harmful effects of lead. Frequently, the doctors will put children with lead poisoning on an extra, iron supplement also. So foods like peanut butter and lean meats and fish and eggs, you know, that have iron in them. And then lastly, we would want to also encourage vitamin C, because that helps the body absorb calcium and iron better and is going to help us you know, have the child, you know, again, through their nutrition and through their diet, help to get rid of the harmful effects of the lead in their body. And I already mentioned hand washing.
Wash your hands. 20 seconds. Hands. Soap and water. Not just, you know, not just a hand wipe. You know, try to.
Yeah. Wash your hands all the time.
And, you know, teach these habits to kids early.
Yeah. Any helpful tips? To leave the listeners?
The biggest thing that I think that we also want to like leave with is really that a blood test is really the best way to determine if a child has been exposed to lead.
So if someone is looking for a blood test, do they come here at the health department or where can they go?
So at the health department, we can do a capillary blood lead level, but that, you know, a capillary blood lead level would just be a finger stick. You know, it's not the most accurate. The most accurate would be a venous blood lead level. So everyone is required to get their blood lead level tested at ages 1 and 2. So, you know, if anyone listening saw that, you know, during their 1 and 2 year old visit, the doctor didn't test them for lead, that should be on their radar. You know, we definitely want it checked because, again, just, you know, most children with lead in their blood have no obvious symptoms. And again, these, you know, it does have harmful effects. So we just want to really stress that.
So a lot of the doctors won't do it at 2, or why are we seeing a lot of like parents?
Well, it's actually required now. So the pediatricians, your pediatrician should be doing it at 1 and 2. The reason I think sometimes where that might get missed is because a lot of times families will move from pediatrician to pediatrician. Mm-hmm. Okay. And so if they show up in your office and the child is 26 months old, perhaps they're not doing a 2-year-old full checkup. So it's just something to keep in mind, especially, you know, people move around a lot. They might move doctors, et cetera. So that just to keep that in mind, that you want those it to be done at those basic times of 1 and 2. And then additionally, if your child is above the age of 1 and under the age of 6 and you are renovation, somebody came in and knocked down a wall and, you know, your landlord knocked down the wall in your home and, you know, there's been dust around and there's been possible exposures. That would be a time to, you know, just ask the doctor to double check and make sure that everything is okay.
Not to say, they can't get it after age 2.
Yes, but those are the times that's required, but that's it can obviously be done.
Right. And we also just to tag on, we also would want, you know, pregnant women to get tested too, thinking across the lifespan, you know, we want pregnant women because they can pass that on.
Pass that on to the baby. Oh, right. Yeah. Any last helpful tips? Anything you would like to recap?
Well, you know, we at the health department as the nursing staff, everything we want to do is to just keep our children as safe and healthy as possible. So just as Rami was talking about, you know, we want to make sure that we're protecting children across their lifespan there. So we want children to be up to date on all of their vaccinations so that they can be safe from, you know, vaccine preventable diseases. We want children to be healthy and well and have a primary care provider that can you know, follow them through any illnesses they might have. Mm-hmm. And part of their keeping up to good health is having lead testing done.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
Yeah.
If you have anybody's questions about health of their children or services that they might need.
Yeah. Specific services that we offer here at the health department related to lead?
We can do some testing in the community. But again, like I mentioned, it is only a capillary blood lead level. You know, we can't really get to the capacity of doing venous blood lead level in the public for children. But we can do a capillary, just a capillary stick. And, you know, that does, you know, give a bit of a number. It won't be the most accurate, but it could give you an idea of where you're at. But definitely we would advise everyone to follow up with their doctor to get an accurate venous blood lead level.
So we also testing in the community at our Botany Village satellite office where they will do capillary testing. We have the consumer analyzer there also. I believe that's once a month. You could check for times by calling the health department. And then there also is an event actually at Boys and Girls Club. And at that point, there will be capillary blood lead testing for children. And I believe they also will have the consumer analyzer at that point. So consumer analyzer, again, would be for items that you have in the home that you think the child might be putting in their mouth or that might contain lead, whether it's a little beautiful ceramic mug that might have glazed paint on it or a toy or something that you think the child might be putting in their mouth.
Or you could put any cooking utensils.
anything like things that. Like that. But that so we do testing out in the community. Again, the capillary testing. If that level came back elevated, then the child would be referred to their physician. For the blood lead testing. And if they don't have their own primary care physician, we would refer them to our local federally qualified health center, which would be able to help them with that testing at that time.
Awesome. Thank you both.
Oh, my goodness.
So much.
Thank you.
Thank you so much for having us.
Privilege and pleasure to be here working for the safety and health of the children of Clifton. We love it.
Yes. If you want to reach our nurses that are on today, you can give them a call at the health department.
And the phone number for the health department is 973-470-5760.
Thank you both so much for coming on and telling us about childhood lead poisoning and how important it is to test your child for lead.
Thank you. Thanks for having us.
Thank you.
Have a wonderful day.
You too.
Lauren, take us out.
Tune in to our podcast every other Monday for a new episode. If you have any questions, you can email us at health@cliftonnj.org. You can visit our website at www.cliftonnj.org. You can follow us on Facebook and follow us on Instagram. Our handle is Clifton Health. And before we leave today, let us ask ourselves, did you make a difference in someone's life today?